Hello and welcome to Nolan Me, Nolan You, a limited series podcast that celebrates the work of writer and director Christopher Nolan. I'm your host, Emily Murray, and today I'm joined by film critic and self-confessed film school nerd Armand Wallman for a bonus episode which looks at the soundtracks of Nolan's movies. Discussing the scores of his films, we look at everything from David Julian's work on earlier movies such as Memento, right through to the powerhouse that is Hans Zimmer and his relationship with Nolan. And of course, we also chat about Ludwig Göransson, who composed the music for Tenet. Welcome, Armand, to Nolan Me, Nolan You. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you, Emily?
I'm okay. I am currently in my cramped spare room because my house is a tip right now. It's got to that point of lockdown where I've just given up on trying to keep it clean. You just want to tell us a bit about yourself. What do you do, etc.?
Yeah, so I am a film and TV critic. I contribute to Empire Magazine, Enemy, Variety. I do weekly radio at TalkSport. And I'm also a video editor. I typically do, so there's this one video a year that I do. It's called the Summer Blockbuster Montage, which I was working on this year before COVID turned the world upside down. So that will be hopefully coming back with a vengeance in 2021, but I'm also a video editor as well.
Yeah, the montage is always very, very cool. And also when you said the world turned upside down, that Hamilton song did start playing in my head.
The world turned upside down.
But this is not a Hamilton podcast, even though that should happen one day.
When that happens, I'll be offended if you don't give me a call.
I mean, you are the Hamilton man. But talking about music, you do describe yourself as a film score nerd.
Yes, I do. Now I do love film scores. The film score which first sort of opened my ears to what a film score could do was Gladiator in 2000, Hans Zimmer, who we will be talking about later on. And yeah, from that point on, I just became more and more interested in film scores. And I do love them. I try not to listen to them before I watch the film, because for me, they are intrinsically tied to the films in which they, you know, play in. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine recently about a track which I'm sure you've heard of, Emily. It's called Portals. It's in this little,
yes.
This little independent film called Avengers Endgame. I'm not sure if you saw it. It made no money. We're talking about Portals and the effect it would or wouldn't have if you had heard it before you'd watched the scene in which it plays. And for me, that's the sort of thing where you have to listen to it for the first time when you're watching the film. Because every time I now hear that track, the visuals in my mind are of Portals. If you listen to that track on its own for the first time without actually watching the film, you may find it more difficult to sort of intrinsically link the visuals to the music. And for me, that's part of the fun of film scores and part of why they're so great.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I'd love film scores. I don't know why you would listen to it before you go see the movie. That doesn't make sense in my mind, but I get that people do. But are you a big fan of listening to them just by themselves after you've seen the film as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my process actually is typically, once I've watched the film or TV show or whatever, and if I've really sort of, you know, thought that the film score had something, I will listen to it on its own, and I will put it in my iTunes, and I will sort of five-star the tracks which I really, really love, so I can come back to it. So that is what I do. There's some sort of albums which have obviously a lot more five stars than others. That's what I do. It just helps me because, there are tracks typically within film scores which more than not work for the scene or whatever, but are not great to listen back to on its own. And it just helps me sort of, you know, have knowledge of what those tracks are and be able to sort of skip them easier. But then there's the odd sort of album which has the perfect score and I don't need to skip anything. For instance, the Gladiator score, which is still my favorite score of all time. I think every track in that score is magnificent, and the entire thing is great. So I don't need to skip anything. I can just press play, sit back, and enjoy the fun.
Just before we start talking about Nolan, it's interesting you say Gladiator because I watched it for the first time ever, Amon, last month. I know.
Wow. That's mad.
I don't know how I missed it. Well, how old? I was like six when it came out, so obviously I was too young to watch
it. Perfect age. No excuse.
Perfect age. But I think it's because it's like the 20th anniversary and I watched it. And I was listening to the soundtrack and I was like, this just sounds like Pirates of the Caribbean.
I've heard that criticism before.
But that's not criticism because Pirates of the Caribbean came after Gladiator, but I was just so like misplaced, if that made sense, because it was very, very similar. I don't know if Pirates of the Caribbean, like, you took notes and stuff from Gladiator.
It's a tricky thing because, like, you know, even though Klaus Badelt is credited with the first Pirates of the Caribbean score, Hans Zimmer did work on that score quite heavily.
Interesting.
So, you know, there's always sort of, you know, been that distinction and that criticism, as, you know, again, it's not new. But I think having experienced Gladiator before Pirates and having re-listened to it and fallen in love with it on such a massive scale at the time of release, I can sort of hear the similarities, but not as much as I think other people can. Like, to me, Gladiator and Pirates is very distinct to one another. If you were to play me one track from one and one track from the other, I'd be able to distinguish immediately. I mean, both scores, in my opinion, are great. But Gladiator, again, there's just something about it which sets it apart. The track, especially Barbarian Horde, I'm not sure if you've gone back and listened to the score on its own, but it plays when... This is just after Maximus has revealed who he is to the Emperor Commodus.
Okay.
And Commodus is like, put his thumb up to say, sort of, you know, live. And then the music starts. That 90 seconds between that scene and the end of that sequence when Maximus is sort of lowered back into the jail and everyone's chanting his name, it's perfect filmmaking for me. And the score is such a huge part of that. The score drives that entire scene. And you know, that's another thing I'm looking forward to talking about in Nolan's respect, because when you have the partnership between a director and a composer, that has a massive difference because they trust each other to mix their score in with whatever is going on screen in a big way. And that trust, that it helps them sort of, you know, drive the scenes and be the focal point in many sequences. I've gone on record about this when I've said this before, but my big problem with the Marvel scores early on wasn't that the scores weren't good, which is a common criticism, which I think is nonsense. It's that they weren't mixed well with the rest of the movie. That is a thing which they have since improved in Phase 3 in a big way. But in the early phases, that was an issue because, you know, they just didn't mix it well and that trust between director and composer wasn't there. But now, you know, they fixed it. And, you know, I think of Sergio Leone and Ennio Morricone and their partnership, which is to the point where Sergio Leone, you know, often told Ennio to go ahead and craft music without anyone having seen any of the visuals, which is something Christopher Nolan, who we're going to be talking about today, does with Hans Zimmer a lot, because they have that trust between director and composer. And that's something which I think leads to better music and therefore leads to better films.
Yeah, and as you say, today we're going to talk about Nolan, obviously, so Hans Zimmer's going to come up. But just before we start talking about the music, I just want to know about what your introduction to Christopher Nolan was and his first film, I suppose, your relationship with his movies.
Interesting. Because I'm a massive nerd, I'm not sure if you'll be able to tell yet, Batman Begins was probably the first Christopher Nolan movie I watched. I've since gone back and acquainted myself with the likes of Memento and what have you. But Batman Begins was the first Christopher Nolan movie I watched. I think it's great. I think it's the best Batman movie, but I think The Dark Knight is the best movie to have Batman in it. if that makes any
that
sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I get that.
The score for that film is immense as well. Every time I think of that score, I think of Molossus, which is the big scene in which the Batmobile makes its debut and has that chase, and that score is great. Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard did an amazing job.
Yeah. I think, I know you were like, oh, you're a nerd, so Batman Begins. I think the most common answers, it's a question I open every podcast with of the guests. I always ask them, what's the first Nolan movie they saw? And I'd say like 9 times out of 10, it's Batman Begins. The odd one's Memento. But I think that was the one that really caught everyone's attention, if you know what I mean. It was the first one I saw as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously it's, you know, Batman is a very big IP. And coming off the back of the disaster that was Batman and Robin, you know, Batman Begins really injected new life into the superhero genre in many ways. And, you know, you can feel its influence in many a film after it as well. It was a very big deal at the time. And I still say this to everyone who will listen, but in my opinion, the final minute of Batman Begins is the best ending to any superhero film ever.
Yes.
I include Endgame, I include Infinity War. Literally, the final minute of that film is about as perfect as you can get. I've memorized the entire sequence verbatim. I'm not gonna bore you with it, but believe me when I tell you, I can do it. I can do the different voices. I'm not gonna do it, but I can.
Okay.
I really love that film. It's great.
Yeah, I've got a lot of affection for Batman Begins. But as I said, we're going to talk about Nolan and soundtracks today, because I don't know about you, but I think the soundtracks for Nolan movies are absolutely spectacular, especially Zimmer. I just love Zimmer, worship Hans Zimmer, hands down. He is amazing. But interestingly, obviously, we had David Julian was the composer on Nolan's earlier movies, which is interesting. Apparently they went to university together, met at film school, and, you know, formed a relationship there. Then he did the music for his short film Doodlebug, and then his first feature following, and then worked on Memento, The Prestige, Insomnia. It's a very, very different sound to Zimmer.
Yeah.
But it works.
Absolutely it works, because I think David Julian, it's interesting the difference between him and Zimmer, because I think he is more minimalist, and he makes music which you don't often sort of notice in the moment, and you don't sort of need to notice in the moment, but it absolutely works for the scene and the characters in which he's telling the emotional story of. Whereas Zimmer's music is made to be noticed more, I think. But that doesn't mean that, you know, I think both styles work for Nolan's movies in different ways. It's very, very interesting. But yeah, when I think of Nolan's earlier movies and sort of the inner struggles which his characters are going through, the music by Julian is perfect for it, because it's minimalist. He blends the electronics with the orchestra in a very interesting way, but it's really, really effective. Also, that was the start of, you know, Nolan is obsessed with time, and the way in which the way in which that works itself into various scores began with Julian, even from The Following onwards. You got that heartbeat and the way it accelerates in creating tension and upping the intensity of certain sequences. That's where it began. So it's interesting that he has followed through with that motif, if you will, all the way through his filmography.
Yeah, I think what you said earlier about minimalistic, you know, the minimalist, it does work a lot for these, I don't want to call it like quieter movies, but I think less maybe like in your face grandiose movies like Memento and Insomnia. Like, I'm a big fan of the work, and I think in a way, like, he wouldn't be the right guy to compose the likes of Batman Begins, which is so that you need loud and big,
bombastic.
which is exactly what Hans Zimmer is, and James Newton Howard. So Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard worked together on the Dark Knight trilogy soundtracks.
Yeah, I actually had the opportunity to speak with James Newton Howard very recently, and he was talking about working with Hans on, you know, those sets of films. And with Batman Begins, I think he told me that he and Hans basically sort of, you know, they worked on every cue together. With The Dark Knight, it was more that Zimmer worked on the Batman and the Joker. Obviously, the Joker piece, Why So Serious, is now sort of iconic in many ways. Mm-hmm. And James Newton Howard worked on the Two-Face material. So James Newton Howard, the more elegiac strings is more James Newton Howard's style. And that comes to the fore in a really brilliant way with the Two-Face music especially. But James Newton Howard is a composer I love. I think his Unbreakable score is superb. But that's for a different pod.
Yeah. I find it interesting when two composers work together, because in my head it wouldn't work because everyone has such different creative vision. But if you listen to it, there isn't, like, I wouldn't be able to tell. Do you know what I mean? Because it is so smooth. As you said, like, it's interesting that they work together so much on the first movie in terms of every cue, and then the second one, Dark Knight, they tackled different aspects, but you wouldn't be able to tell at all. It just feels like it's one.
Absolutely.
Like, create one vision.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just like, the Zimmer's work on The Dark Knight especially, I do want to single him out, because, you know, to make a theme for a character like the Joker, only using essentially one note, and have it be as iconic as it has become, is impressive on a level which, you know, rarely, which few composers reach. It's really quite something. And that Why So Serious theme, which pops up again and again throughout the Dark Knight score, is again, it's not one which I return to often, because again, it's not the, in terms of like easy lessons, I wouldn't put that in that playlist, but it's still impressive, and it really works for the character and the film.
Yeah, it's just that screeching, like, strings. It is, as if just one note, it's incredible what they do with it. You know, the thing about the Dark Knight trilogy soundtrack, I suppose Hans Zimmer in general, is very much like the extremities. You know, there's no middle ground. It's like high strings or like really low percussion, but it matches perfectly, I think, the tone of the films.
Absolutely. Now, you need, for someone sort of as popular and sort of, you know, bombastic, I guess, as Batman is, you do need something which is going to match that, and sort of on an emotional and musical level. And it really brings that out in a really big way. And I think with Zimmer's scores, part of what is so great about it, they're actually very, very simple when you boil it down. And, you know, the motif for Batman is literally two notes. But the layers Zimmer adds on top of that as the trilogy goes on really sort of adds to it in a big way. Obviously, you got Molossus in Batman Begins, but the spiritual sequel to that track, for me, is The Dark Knight and Like a Dog Chasing Cars, which is one of my favorite tracks ever.
Same.
And, you know, the way he builds and builds that track, it's just immense. And it's hard, again, because I'm a massive nerd, but, you know, I try playing that track and then playing Batman the Arkham games at the same time, and you do feel like you are Batman. Even when you're not playing the Batman Arkham games, to be honest, you do feel like, you know, it's very easy to get yourself into a Batman mindset. It's just that epic, for want of a better word. And again, and ending that track, and then the counterpoint at the end of that track is, you know, going back to that Joker theme in a really interesting way as well. So if you have to single out one track from the Dark Knight trilogy, it will be that one.
Yeah, it's my personal favorite too. It's also, it made me laugh when you were saying about the games, because my boyfriend plays the Spider-Man PlayStation game. But he plays it whilst listening to the Sam Raimi Spider-Man soundtrack.
Interesting. I mean, obviously, again, this is not that pod, but but now that you mention it, I gotta talk about it. The Danny Elfman scores for the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans are really good, but I tell you what, John Pisano did a fantastic job with the score for that Spider-Man PS4 game, and it's one of my favorite Spider-Man scores, period. And Spider-Man has actually had a lot of really great scores. He's had the Danny Elfman score, he's had the John Pisano score on the Spider-Man game, and Daniel Pemberton obviously really just did a great job with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Spider-Man yes. Loves You from that score is a magnificent track. And the theme there is great too. So yes, when you do that episode, give me a call.
I will. Well, my boyfriend has a Spider-Man podcast himself that's coming out. Oh. So I shall tell him. I shall get him to text you about it.
Do that.
I'll do that. Yeah, one thing I was going to say was, obviously Hans Zimmer, then, like, we have to talk about Hans Zimmer and Chris Nolan, because they worked together without James Newton Howard on Inception, Dunkirk, and Interstellar. For me, Inception is my favourite score from all of Nolan's movies. I really like the Dark Knight trilogy ones. I mean, I like all of them, but Inception, I think, just really, it's very emotional.
I completely agree. I think Inception is the high point in so many ways. It's so varied, it's so dynamic, and it's also now iconic. Yeah, I think if you ask me to pick out what my favourite sort of Zimmer score is overall, then it's Gladiator by far. Gladiator is still my favourite score of all time. But the best Hans Zimmer track is Time. And yeah, to get the sense of feeling that you get from that track, both in the moment when you're watching the film and on its lonesome, is incredible. And the fact that, again, at its heart, it's so simple. It's like 4 chords. But what Zimmer does with it, how he builds it, how yeah. he layers it, how he brings it back for the last of the 30 seconds to make it minimalist and brings it back to just a piano refrain, it's a really emotional, beautiful track. And, you know, I'm not sure if you had the opportunity to see Hans Zimmer live. If you hadn't, get yourself out. Get yourself to a concert.
I need to.
But he performed it live at Wembley. I went to go watch it with my brothers a few years ago, and it was spectacular. Spectacular.
That must have been quite something.
Nah, yeah. that entire thing was just amazing. Because he starts off his set with, like, you know, still a fair few musicians on stage, but then halfway through one of the opening tracks, the curtain opens and there's like a whole big ass orchestra behind the curtain playing this. It was amazing. Everyone was going nuts. It was just an amazing, amazing night. But yeah, Time is the one. But, I mean, again, that entire, I was telling you about earlier how I go through the scores once I sort of see the film, and five star the tracks. I've got like 6 tracks from Inception 5-star. You think about Dream is Collapsing, you think about Old Souls, you think about Mombasa, you think about Waiting for a Train. All of these tracks before Time even comes up. And, you know, it's such a very dynamic score, which works really, really well for the scenes in which it's being used in. It's definitely the high watermark for me and for Hans Zimmer and Nolan, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you about, why do you think Zimmer and Nolan work so well together? Like, when I'm thinking of the greatest director-composer relationships, what comes to mind is Spielberg and John Williams, of course. And then after that, Nolan and Zimmer, because they just match each other so well, I think.
I would add Leone and Morricone to that, but yeah, I can't argue with them.
Yeah.
I can't argue with those. Why do I think they work together so well? I mean, again, it comes back to that trust thing I was talking about earlier. That having, once you sort of get that director-composer tandem, and, you know, any time... If a director can sort of go to their composer and say, here's the idea, go ahead and compose, without any sort of visuals being involved, then that just speaks for itself, I think. And again, I think that leads to sort of better music, because the composer is so involved in the process long before sort of, you know, sometimes the film has been shot. So, you know, obviously tons of composers have, you know, different processes in terms of how they like to work. But that one, if you find sort of the right tandem, I think yields to the best results. And you think about the tracks that really stand out and the tracks that really drive the scenes that are taking place at the same time. You know, in such a sense, it's just the music. There's nothing else. So there's no dialogue. There's no nothing. It's just the music telling you all that you need to know on an emotional storytelling level. I think about The Dark Knight Rises and the scene in which Bruce rises from the pit, and you got the chants from, you know, the prisoners sort of, you know, getting more and more aggressive, but that's still just the music rising, rising, building, 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 becoming more and more epic. Scenes like that you can only get from an amazing director composer tandem. I think of Supermarine in Dunkirk, and again, not only have you got the TikTok at the time refrain, which Milner loves, but you think about how that track escalates and becomes more and more intense and more intense. That's something which, you know, Nolan has always loved since before he's worked with Zimmer, but Zimmer has really brought that out and accentuated it in a really massive way, as only he can do, because Zimmer is, you know, when it comes to bombastic composers, I think Zimmer is the first one that pops into many people's minds, and rightly so.
Yeah, and what do you think of the criticism that, because when I, you know, talk about Zimmer, and particularly in Nolan's films, some people are like, he's too much. And I know it's obviously everyone's like, it's based on their personal opinion and stuff, and like obviously people prefer different kinds of music, but I never find it too much at all. It's not something I click with.
There's one film where I found it too much, and I think, you know, it was interesting. Like, it's the film which I speak of is Interstellar. Because there were times, and like, I remember that the first time I watched it, it was in the Odeon West End before it was refurbished, and the sound in that cinema had always notoriously been, you know, not great. Like, even when I saw it for the second time in IMAX, BFI IMAX, you know, the way it was really meant to be seen, there were still some times where, you know, the music was overscoring the dialogue. I couldn't hear what was being said. And I think partially that was by design, but you never want it to become, you with Zimmer's music, you want to notice it, but you don't want it to distract. You never want music to distract. And I think with Interstellar, it did overstep that line for me a little bit. And especially in Nolan's sort of recent filmography, it's my least favorite film. I think listening to the score on its own has given me more appreciation for it, but I remember being a little irritated by that in the moment. That's the only time it's ever happened for me with a Zimmer Nolan collaboration.
It's interesting. Interstellar is actually, it's one of my personal favourite movies of his, but also in terms of the score. I know. I just find the score like an Inception. Inception just really like helps bring out the emotion of it, and it's all about the quiet moments too. There's such a focus on silence compared to like that big, you know, strings and percussion. I really like that balance.
Yeah, it's just a little too much organ for me, I gotta say. And I love the organ typically, but I think he does go overboard. I remember watching the Honest trailer for that, and I think the line was Hans Zimmer fell asleep on his organ, which did make me laugh. And may have been accurate, I don't know. But,
Hans Zimmer fell asleep on his organ. But that's one of the movies, you know, where Nolan just gave him like a bit of like, I think like one line about what the film's about before, and said to him, you know, start composing before you even saw the visuals, which is what you mentioned earlier about, you know, the way that they are so like in sync that he can compose it without seeing anything of the film.
Yeah. Absolutely, and there are very few composers who, there are very few director composer tandems like that, and it's a special thing.
It is very special. I suppose we have to talk about Tenet, of course.
They are breaking from. I think Zimmer and Nolan did want to work together on this one, but Zimmer is working on a small independent film called Dune. I'm not sure if you've heard about it.
No idea.
So he wasn't able to work on it, but I'm very happy that Ludwig Göransson is composing this one. I've long been a fan of his work. Obviously, he scored both Creed and Creed 2, and I love both of those scores. The Mandalorian is a score which I've been really, really enjoying as well, to the point where, you know, the Mandalorian score, typically when an episode ends, you know, you just... You either sort of, you know, X out immediately, or you know, click, you know, click on next episode. But The Mandalorian, you want to watch the credits because half because of the visuals and the end of the credits, which are great, with the concept art, but the music gets the chance to really, really shine. And Ludwig Göransson did a magnificent job with that. The way it goes from vintage Star Wars to classic sort of, you know, old Western style rock in many respects, and then to going back to vintage Star Wars all within the same track is just fantastic. And, you know, when I got my hands on that score, I listened to it a lot. I'm sure I angered everyone on my street because I was listening to it very, very loudly. But really, I shouldn't have been angering them. They should have been loving it and thanking me because the score is just that good. I'm a big fan of his. Obviously, of course, you have to mention Black Panther, which...
I loved Black Panther score.
It's just an exceptional, exceptional score. It's very deserving of the, you know, of the Oscar that it won. The fact that it was the first superhero film to win an Oscar for best score is great, but it's also crazy to me because how does John Williams not win the Oscar for Superman? Ludicrous, among many of other course, scores which were you know, deserving before Ludwig, but that score is fantastic. The work that he put in beforehand in terms of actually going to Africa, experiencing the sounds, getting that authentic sound, really makes a difference. And how he sort of, you know, has that authentic sound, but then merges it with the trap sound, which he uses for Killmonger, and how those two things merge and, you know, blend with each other as Killmonger sort of, you know, makes his play for the throne is really, really impressive. The track which plays when Killmonger first sort of takes the throne, and it's that 360 degree shot with the camera slowly starts upside down. The music is the blend of T'Challa's theme and Killmonger's theme, and what he does with that is just magnificent. One of many things which is just so great about that score. I'm excited for him to get this opportunity. I'm excited to hear what he's going to come up with, and hopefully he can foster the same kind of relationship that Hans has with Nolan himself.
Are you a bit disappointed that, you know, Zimmer won't be working with Nolan on Tenet, or are you a bit like it's time for a new voice, but you know, a new composer to be working with this director?
I'm not necessarily that it's time for a new voice, because I love the Zimmer Nolan collaboration, and I'll be more than happy for them to continue working with one another for the rest of their careers. But I'm just happy that the new voice we are getting is someone who I'm already such a big fan of. I'm intrigued to see what that tandem might yield. But you know, anytime you got something as special as Nolan and Zimmer clearly have, you have to sort of keep that going and give the people what they want, as they say. I'm sure it won't be too long before they decide to team up again, and I look forward to that happening.
Yeah. See, I'm like, as you say, like, they work so well together. I'm a bit sad, I suppose, that we're not getting it for Tenet. But also, when I saw that it was Ludwig Göransson, I was like, nah, he is cool. So, I think
You know, is there something you'd like to say about his hair?
I was saying to you earlier that he has incredible hair, and I think he's probably the hottest composer that we have. Would you, I don't know?
Ludwig, if you're listening, Emily does have a boyfriend, so hands off, okay?
He has incredible hair, though. I was like, I don't even know why. I just think that these, I don't know, it was very unexpected in a good way when I googled him earlier. But very young, too. So he was a positive teacher.
I really hope your boyfriend does not listen to this podcast.
He's just saying. He's fine. Are you looking forward to seeing Tenet when it comes out?
I am. I just hope that I understand enough of what's going on in the moment to enjoy it. Because as good as Inception is, I've watched that film a few times, I still don't fully understand what's going on. And that's one of the reasons why The Prestige, for me, just pips Inception as my favourite Christopher Nolan film of all time.
It goes there to
The Prestige, Inception, Dark Knight Trilogy, and then it goes from there. But The Prestige, I think, is just a perfect blend of all those Christopher Nolan elements that we've come to know and love, with incredible performances. I don't know why Hugh Jackman has not worked with Christopher Nolan again since The Prestige, because that performance is one of his best in his career. So yeah, and just the rivalry between those two men, how they try and keep up one upping each other, and then the score by David Julian in that film is great too, because The Prestige is so much about what's happening, even though you can't see what's happening. And you know, it's a unique challenge for a composer in trying in terms of trying to tell the story within the story emotionally on a musical level. But I think Julian manages it in a really, really impressive way. I highly recommend going back and just checking out that score on its lonesome. It's not, again, one which I'd put in the easy listens playlist, but it's so effective and it really, really works for the film. So yeah, but yeah, I'm very, very excited for Tenet, and for what Ludwig Göransson has come up with. It should be interesting.
Yeah, same here. I think it'll be quite different in terms of the score, but I'm excited.
Embrace
to
change,
that.
Emily. Embrace change.
I'm trying. I think Tenet looks very similar, theme wise and style wise, to Inception. I know it won't be, because expect the unexpected, I suppose, when it comes to Christopher Nolan. But I was nervous when I heard that Zimmer wasn't doing the score. But then when I read about who his, I'm not going to call it a replacement, but you know, like the guy stepping into his shoes, I was like, no, that is, it's in safe hands, I think. It's in safe hands.
Absolutely. No, Ludwig has earned this shot and he will not throw it away. Last Hamilton reference, I promise.
We have to get him in because we are both massive Hamilton fans. Where can people see more of your work, follow you on social media, etc.?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at awarman. You can find me there. And yeah, from there, that's why I post all my stuff from Variety, Empire, NME, TalkSport. All my outlets. I started writing for a new outlet called Composer Magazine. And I'll be talking with a lot of sort of, you know, composers from up and coming composers. I just actually spoke to Nami Melimad, who did the score for An American Pickle with Michael Giacchino. So that interview will be up very soon. I did a massive 1-hour interview with Terence Blanchard recently, who's obviously Spike Lee's go-to guy. Talk about another great director-composer tandem. Spike Lee and Terence Blanchard is definitely one of them. And we got into loads of things, and that interview is now up online. You can, you know, if you go through my Twitter, you'll be able to find it. As I say, I just recently spoke to James Newton Howard, Daniel Pemberton. I spoke to Ilan Eshkiri, who did the score for a video game, Ghost of Tsushima, which is out now. That interview will be up very soon. But Ilan has also scored films like Coriolanus, like Layer Cake. So you know, he's one of the best composers around as well. So look out for that website, especially if you're a fan of this podcast, because I think there'll be content you will like to read.
That sounds brilliant. As you shout it all on Twitter, don't you? So that's always a good place to follow you. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great. Thanks. That was me and Amon Warman chatting about all things for scores and Nolan's movies. On the next episode, I am joined by film journalist Eamon Jacobs for a special Tenet preview episode, looking at what you can expect, plot details, theories, and more. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on Twitter @NolanMeNolanYou, and feel free to get in touch too with any feedback. See you next time.